interview with Laurie Hooper, who's standing for the Ramsey constituency. Good morning, Mr. Hooper. Can I ask you, first of all, and this is a bit of a bold question, do you think you've been an effective MHK?
That's no less bold than I'd expect from you after a few years in this job. I think I have, actually. So I think over the last 5 years, it's probably quite fair to say that I've been one of the more vocal and probably the one more active MHKs as well, actually, not just in Keys and Tynwald in legislative terms, but also in terms of all the work that goes on behind the scenes. So I think I've definitely delivered on the things I set out to deliver. So in my manifesto last time around, I had 27 things I thought we needed to start work on or to complete by the end of this administration, if possible. And I went through my list the other day, and of all those things, there's only one that actually I haven't managed to make any progress on at all. So there's a number that have been completely done, tick the box. There's a number that are kind of halfway there, we're getting there, but there's only one that I haven't managed to achieve.
You're not going
to
say roads, are you, manager?
No, unfortunately not. No, it was to do with education tax breaks, actually, to try and support people with things like nursery costs and education costs. We used to have the tax covenant in place, and they got rid of that in the middle of the last administration. I was just thinking, actually, we should probably bring that back to help bring the cost of education down a little bit, and haven't made any progress on that one, unfortunately.
What some of the things you actually did mention at the time was well-maintained roads, available affordable housing, reasonably priced and reliable utilities.
Yeah, so in terms of the roads, that one, not an ideal situation. For
well, that's impossible, isn't it? I mean, everyone accepts. I mean, it's a wish thing, isn't it?
I don't accept that, actually. I think that with the right level of investment, I think you can sort your infrastructure problems.
But that's £100 million.
Oh, I'm not saying it's a small amount of investment by any stretch, and I'm not advocating going away and spending the whole amount overnight. But I think if we can gradually improve the way that we do things, and that's really been my approach for the last few years, is I'm not one of these believers in let's do nothing until we can do everything. So I wouldn't be saying, let's get £100 million fix all the roads. I'd be saying, actually, can we get a million and fix some of the roads, actually improve the way we do things, and maybe that will filter out, and hopefully that will make things gradually better. Affordable housing is another issue. It's still here with us. I still get a lot of contacts and queries from constituents about access to commissioners' housing. Again, I've been fighting against the new point system for the last 3 years since they brought it in. I'm now sitting on a housing working group. We're trying to actually develop the terms of reference for an all-island housing strategy.
This is a housing amendment bill also is sitting there lurking in the background.
Yes.
Concept of specific management application. What on earth does that mean?
So this is a private members bill that I've brought through the House of Keys. It's just finished its passage through the House, actually. It's now onto LegCo, and it's about reforming leasehold rights on the Isle of Man. So in the UK, if you're a leaseholder of a flat, residential flat, you have the right to acquire management rights over that block of flats. If enough of you get together and say, we'd like to manage this block of flats ourselves. The UK also have the right to buy. So actually, again, the flats can get together and say we'd like to collectively purchase the block of flats.
And that seems like it's making good progress.
It is, yeah. So
will it get through in this administration?
That's the million-dollar question. So the first half of that is what the bill deals with, that a right to acquire, the right to manage a block of flats collectively, if you live in them, if you're a leaseholder. It's finished its way through Keys, so it's now with LegCo. I've got a member of LegCo who's happy to volunteer and take it through for me. It's quite possible it will get through the other side of LegCo before the end of this term. It might not. It might have to come back to Keys after the election next time around, but either way, I'm quite comfortable that I think it is going to be on the books at some point very soon.
You have a background in accountancy and auditing as well. You do a lot of analysis of stuff that comes forward, yeah. But it does seem when you stand up and do this whole list of things, surely this should have been done before it actually appeared before you guys. I mean, is that the way you look at it yourself?
Sometimes, yeah. So quite a lot of the work that I've done over the last 5 years has been that kind of detailed challenge.
Coming up behind with a sort of dustpan and brush.
Sometimes, yeah. And to my mind, a lot of that should be getting done inside the departments. So a lot of the questions that get asked on the floor of Tynwald or Keys, sometimes that's where they're always going to be asked. Because when you're in the trenches doing some of this stuff, you can't see the wood for the trees. So you get quite fixated on what's in front of you. And sometimes you need a pair of extra set of eyes to say, actually, let's take a step back and think about this more broadly. And that's the whole purpose of parliamentary scrutiny. It's the whole purpose of public scrutiny, is to get someone who hasn't been down in the mire, actually just look at this from another perspective. And sometimes that happens, and it's really positive. Sometimes, though, you're right, it's picking through stuff that actually really should have been identified quite easily early on, and for some reason hasn't been. And so a lot of the stuff that I've done over the last 5 years has been that kind of challenge to say, hold on a second, Minister or members, why didn't you pick some of this stuff up? Because this isn't going to work. And we've seen that with the Landlord Registration Bill, for example. It came through, it's been in progress for about 2 years, and I managed to work with the department on that one and get 147 amendments to that bill.
you said, I don't know where to start with this one. and there's so much wrong with it.
Exactly. And a lot of that could have been picked up earlier in the process if people had been doing this kind of analysis or this kind of critical thinking, I think, from earlier in the process. And as an auditor, that's something you're trained to do, really.
How much time do you spend at home sitting over these things?
Quite a lot, actually. Yeah, it is.
But do you enjoy doing it? Because I define some people as politicians, the people who wake up in the morning thinking about politics and go to sleep thinking about politics. And you strike me as that sort of person. Is politics absolutely your life?
I'm going to say no to that, actually, because I don't see any of this as politics. Ultimately, I'm here to represent the best interest of my constituents. And for me, that's the number one part of this job. So when I'm looking through that landlord registration bill, I'm not looking through it because I'm really interested in the politics behind it all. I'm looking through it going, how is this going to impact on people? Is this going to improve things? And if it isn't, let's not do it. And that's the kind of mindset that I'd like to bring to all of this. Is this going to help? Is it going to improve things? Is it going to make things better? And if you can't see that it's going to do those things, actually, someone needs to stand up and say, hold on a second, you need to go back to the drawing board with some of these things.
Well, let's talk about Ramsey in a moment. First of all, I had a person on the other day who was saying, this is a national election. But I felt like saying to him, but you're going to be elected by the people of a specific constituency. So what is more important to you? What happens in Ramsey or what happens all over the island? Or is one interwoven with the other?
I think the two are quite heavily interlinked, actually. So I'll give you an example of that. So coming through the coronavirus pandemic, one of the things I've been doing is working with the Economic Recovery Group, helping get the support schemes up and running. And right early on in that, we sat down and said, right, this is going to happen. We're going to go into lockdown. What do we need to do? And from my perspective, thinking about my constituents, a lot of my constituents are self-employed. A lot of them are working in trades or what have you. And actually, the most important thing is getting cash into their pockets, because ultimately we've all got bills to pay. And most people in this circumstance, you know, no one's got 10 grand sitting in the bank account. So actually, if you do have a month or 2 months without work, how are you going to cover those costs? And so for me, the most important thing we could do right at the outset of the pandemic of the financial support schemes is how can we get that cash into people's pockets very, very quickly. And from that kind of concept came eventually Mira, which was largely based on kind of things the Irish were doing at the time. And so for me, that's a national issue. But the way that you have to approach it is to say, actually, this is going to affect everyone on the island, but how is it going to affect my constituents any differently? And if there is a difference, which sometimes there is, you have to kind of put that hat on as well and say, well, how do I make this work, not just for the whole island, but also for Ramsey? Because the worst outcome for me would be saying, let's do something that might be good for the whole island, but actually isn't any good at all for your local constituency. And there's a difficult balance to strike there.
So in terms of Ramsey, I mean, say, for instance, the town hall, the future of the town hall, where does that feature in what people are concerned about this election?
So for me, I think it's about access to those government services. So you get a lot of services that you can only really access face-to-face.
When I said town hall, I meant the courthouse, that building there.
So it's all tied in, actually. So the courthouse has a lot of kind of emotional attachment, I think, for me and for a lot of people in Ramsey, and I would like to see it back in full use. And what we've seen over the last few years is the commissioners step up to the plate, they've taken ownership of the building, and they are actually using it more than I think they thought they would. And that's where I think it's taken them a while to get a more permanent use in for the building. So it's quite regularly used for meetings and presentations and that kind of stuff. And so for me, that now is very much a local issue. It's handed over to the commissioners. The commissioners are elected. It's not my job to tell them what to do and what not to do. Really, they're answerable to the electorate in the same way that I am. So that, for me, has now become that kind of local. Right, we've done our bit as national politicians. We've helped you take that responsibility on, but really, you've got to go away and deliver on it. And so when that kind of issue happens, and it happens quite a lot with not just the courthouse, but things like housing, which is very much a local function, really, it's my job, I think, as an MHK, to act as that liaison and support between people and the people who are responsible, or sometimes between government and the commissioners. Sometimes you do need to sit down and make sure that both sides are talking, if that makes sense.
Well, getting away from the government, we've seen, obviously, the Ramsey Pier, a bit of it, the first bits of the bay has been completed. But can I just talk about the marine development? How important is that to Ramsey? It's obviously gone on hold because of COVID.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting one. I'm assuming you're talking about the marina rather than the quayside.
The big development.
So that's a private initiative. Government aren't involved in that in any way. And as far as I'm aware, everything has been put on pause, as it were. I think the people behind the development are quite keen to say, look, it'll have loads of benefits, a lot of economic benefits to the town, loads of jobs. There's obviously another side to that coin, because if you do develop that part of Ramsey, you might end up with a housing estate there, which maybe people aren't so keen on. You might lose public open space. And so whether it will benefit the town or not, I don't think the case has been proven either way. If I'm perfectly honest, I've not seen enough from the developers to say this will definitely deliver XYZ and it will definitely be of benefit. because you have to bear in mind what you will lose as a result. And I think that if that is going to go ahead, it's got to be done with private funding. I don't think they can fall back on the taxpayer in any way for this. And I think they have to prove that case. And then if they can prove the economic case, they've then got to go and prove the environmental side of things. And there's a lot of hurdles I think they're going to have to
jump
through.
Is it going
to happen? If I was a betting man, I don't know, actually. I'd say possibly not. I think they talked really big numbers at the outset in terms of funding. And I think, as well as COVID, there's a lot of other stuff going on that makes me think, is it really the right development at the right time for Ramsey? I don't know the answers to any of these questions.
Well, we go on to the bigger questions as far as Manx politics is concerned. The chief ministerial position is obviously one. You were one of the people who wanted someone to declare if they wanted to be a chief minister.
Yes.
Before the election, you said it was a no-brainer. It was actually voted down by people who are apprehensive, I suppose, the effect that would have on the electorate if you stood up and said, yeah, I want to be chief minister. So if you made it compulsory, I suppose, and everybody who wanted to had to declare whether they wanted chief minister would alter the situation. But what's your view on that? I mean, you obviously think everyone should declare.
For me, I think it's just about honesty, actually. If you know now that you want the job, why not tell people? You know, if people are voting for you based on what they know about you, and they only know what you tell them or what you share with them. So if you don't tell somebody something, how are they able to make that fully informed choice?
The newspaper put your picture on its front page, didn't they?
They did.
You say you know no chief minister.
At this point in time, it's not a job I'm gunning for. I think I've been clear that if a Liberal van had 12 candidates and we all got elected and we had a majority, then naturally we'd form a government. But actually, when we're only running fewer candidates than that, actually, you think, where's the mandate to immediately announce, oh, I'm going to go for the job? I'm not saying it can't happen. It might very well be that post-election, everyone decides I'd be a great chief minister, but it's not on my radar right now, and it's not something that I'm overly interested in, to be honest, at this time.
Let's stay with your party at the moment. 16 months into this administration, you were asked by late Roger Waterson, being a member of with a member there, how does that affect your position? She said it's helpful having someone backing you up. You now don't have someone to back you up. You are in effect sort of an independent because everybody else is an independent. Does that make life different?
I don't think it does. I think it makes it slightly harder, admittedly, but then now I'm just in the same position that every other member of the House of Keys is in.
Except you have a set of rules that have been put down by your party, in effect. I mean, guidelines.
Yeah, but again, that's no different, really, to anyone else that stands. I'm just being a bit more open and transparent about what I believe in. So, as a party, we've published on our website a list of the kind of principles, things that we'd like to stick to, things like reducing income inequality or improving quality of life. There's lots of stuff on there, but really, every member of the House of Keys is the same. Everyone has said, this is the box that I'm in, this is where I sit. We're just quite open about that, as opposed to other members who maybe don't have such a clear set of principles published anywhere. So I don't see that as any different now. I have had the advantage of like 3.5-4 years of having another member with me, and that I think has really helped in terms of enabling us to deliver more of what we were trying to deliver as a party or even as individual MHKs. So I think rather than seeing myself now as, oh no, now it's just me, I look at it more, well, I had 4 years of great partnership working, which I'm hoping to get back to after the election. I'm hoping to have another couple of Liberal van and MHKs in there with me so we can do that again.
Because the idea at one stage was to get a Liberal van and candidate, this was some years ago, standing in every constituency.
Yeah.
Is that practical? Is that going to happen?
I think it will eventually, at some point.
But not this time?
No, I've been quite clear from the outset that I'm not a fan of just running candidates for the sake of it. I think if we're going to run candidates, they have to be credible, they have to be good, they have to be people that we genuinely believe in and that they genuinely believe in us as a party as well. So there's definitely a balance to be struck. And again, we're definitely going to run a number of candidates. You've seen Paul Weatherall declare already. There'll be another declaration coming soon and then hopefully more to follow. So really, it's just a case of can we get the right people in the right places to do the right job?
Now, Paul Weatherall is the chairman, isn't he?
Yes.
And Vannin, you're the leader.
Yes, that's right.
So that's the way it's defined. Can I just talk about certain things that you've stood up and said, this is what should happen and it hasn't happened? Climate change bill.
Yeah.
You wanted the date changed for zero emissions from 2050 to 2035. You got 7 votes, but you unfortunately got more against you,
yeah,
etc. How important do you think it is that the island actually sets itself that earlier target?
Well, I've said this from the outset, that for me, climate change isn't necessarily just about that reduction of carbon. It's an economic opportunity for the island. The UK have seen this. The UK have just brought their target forward to 2035. That 78% reduction on 1990 levels. They've done it. They've said actually they know that the way you tackle this challenge is by creating jobs, is by improving people's homes, improving people's quality of life, reducing people's energy bills, all these things which are we would be doing anyway, even if we didn't have climate change.
So would you bring this back in the next administration if you get in?
I think I would, actually. But if the point I've tried to make consistently throughout the climate debate is that the date itself isn't that relevant. You can move as quickly or as slowly as you want, because the ultimate goal is that 2050 net zero target. The point that I've tried to make consistently is if you're a first mover in this space, actually it's about grabbing that economic opportunity, which I think that's where I think I differ from our government, is I'm not sure they quite see that. I think I do. I think the UK government see this quite clearly. I think a number of members of Keys see that there is a huge opportunity here for us, especially coming out of the COVID pandemic. We're talking about building back with a green, a digital recovery. Actually, there's a lot to be said for that. And so this isn't just about carbon reduction and carbon emissions. This is also about jobs. It's about quality of life. It's about living costs. And actually, we wrap all these things up in the climate banner. That's nice. That's great. But the focus has to be on how will this be better for people, which is what I was talking about earlier. Do I genuinely believe that us taking all these actions and making this investment as a government, will that improve people's lives on the Isle of Man? I think absolutely yes, it will.
Let's just go on to COVID, because that's the first time we've mentioned COVID in this interview. When should the government relax its COVID grip on the economy and loosen up? When should it allow people to get back to normal? Is there a specific date, or is there, in your view?
Well, they've already announced that the end of June is where they're hoping to move back to unrestricted travel. I'm not quite sure whether that means travel with some testing or travel with different traffic lights, like they do in Guernsey, for example. But it seems to me that the point that you start relaxing conditions is the point where more people have been vaccinated. So it's at what point are we going to hit that 70%, 60, 70% threshold? It feels to me that the end of June is roughly when we're going to get there. So to my mind, if we've vaccinated everybody with those two doses, surely that's what government's job is to make sure that everyone has been vaccinated. And when you've done that, what's the next step? Well, the next step must surely be to get back to normal. That isn't quite the same as saying government should stop its economic support, which I think is the question you're asking. When should we stop intervening in the economy? I can see that going on for a lot longer. I mean, businesses and individuals have had a year of really significant disruption. And I'm not convinced that we get to the 1st of July, the borders open and everything's hunky-dory.
It won't be hunky-dory for a while, because the government has to repair the damage.
That's exactly the point. I don't think it's government that's going to be repairing the damage. I think it will be those individual businesses, those entrepreneurs, the private sector are the ones that are going to drive a lot of that recovery. But it's government's job, I think, to support them in doing that, to help them do that in the best way possible, really. And that's where government, I think, comes in, and I think government can make a real difference there.
Let's just talk about ministers and the steam packet. Quote, failures were clearly on the part of the ministers. You believe that?
I do. I think the report that we saw from Stephen Hind was quite clear on that there were failings on the government side. It does talk about some potential issues the steam packet had, but really the report is quite critical of the government response. And for me, it comes back to, it's not this question of hindsight. It's not looking back, what do we know now? It's actually saying, what did we know then? What did we know about the risk to the steam packet and testing of critical staff, for example? And we know that back in May last year, backbenchers like myself were asking government questions about, are you testing all of your critical workers? Are you testing your key workers? And the answer that government came back to in May last year was, yes, we're looking at doing this now. And you think that was in May. So government was aware that this should have been going on. And yet, between May and February, it seems like no one asked those questions. No one in government said, actually, are we checking on them, on the steam packet crew? We're checking on everyone else who's in isolation. Are we checking on steam packet members? And the answer is, no, they weren't. And so, to my mind, I'm not sure that you can blame the steam packet for doing what they'd been advised to do.
Does forgiveness come into this? Or does, we've got another, the PAC are actually looking into this as well. Do heads have to roll? Does someone have to stand up and take responsibility?
So I'm vice chair of the PAC, so I can't really talk too much about what they were doing. I don't think necessarily it's about heads rolling. It is about people standing up and being accountable for the decisions they've made. There's a huge difference between saying, I'm sorry for the mistakes others have made and I'll take responsibility, and saying, I made mistakes, I take responsibility for my own mistakes. And what we've heard so far from government is the first of
those. I'm sorry from the Chief Minister.
We've had from the government so far, there were mistakes made and it wasn't clear enough, and I'm sorry for the mistakes that were made through that process. But so far, what I've not heard is someone say, actually, as a group of ministers, as the Council of Ministers, we're sorry for not asking more questions. We're sorry for not perhaps being as robust as we could have been in challenging some of the things we were being told and some of the advice we were being given. And it's difficult to put this in context because everyone makes mistakes. No one's perfect. I absolutely get that. But when you have backbenchers like myself or Chris Robertshaw asking these questions, you know, in the middle of last year, you've got to ask yourself, if we knew enough to ask these questions, surely the ministers did as well.
I just want to move on to the subject of living wages. And you say the minimum wage wage should transition into a living wage in 5 years.
Yeah.
That's what you believe, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to my mind...
I mean, a lot of people don't know what the difference is, basically.
Well, the difference is about £2 an hour, actually, which, if you're really earning the minimum wage...
Yeah, but why there is a difference? Why we don't just have one level?
That is the million-dollar question, I think. I think it's because the minimum wage has always been set at what the government considers affordable, as opposed to, actually, is this enough to allow somebody to participate fully in society? And it isn't just the minimum wage that needs to go up. It's also things like our benefit rates. So there's a select committee report that's just been published that talks about minimum the benefit levels actually being pegged in some way to a living wage. That's what we did with MIRA. That's what we did with salary support. We identified that actually, you know, if you want people to actively participate in society and have a good quality of life, you need to make sure they've got enough money in their pocket to do that. And so this is where it's all about for me, is improving that quality of life, improving people's ability to actually enjoy life on the Isle of Man. And yes, it can't be brought in overnight. It's got to be a transition. And if businesses need support to help get them there, I think that's absolutely fine as well.
20 minutes passes very quickly indeed. Laurie Hooper, standing for the constituency of Ramsey, thank you for joining us.
Thanks very much.